Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 386 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Amber Saunders. Amber is an attorney, has her own firm, the SaundersFirm.com, as it were, in Atlanta, Georgia, one of my favorite places. And Amber started out, like many of us, thinking she was going to do one type of law while going to law school, ended up doing something completely different. Now she focuses primarily on estate planning and business law in the Atlanta area. So we're going to talk about that journey and the intersection between those two practice areas. And I think what you're going to really enjoy listening to Amber about is she's very candid about the mistakes that she made and the hurdles she had to overcome and how almost all of them were centered around her. And I think that's a lesson that we can all learn a great deal from. So without any further delay, here is Amber Saunders. Amber Saunders, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you with us today, Amber. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Awesome. So I was always going to be a lawyer. My mother says I told her in kindergarten something, and I don't know how really, because we didn't have any lawyers in our family, but her favorite show was Perry Mason, and mine was Law and Order, so that might have been what did it. And then, you know, went to law school thinking that I was going to be one kind of lawyer and then ended up doing something completely different. But
that
always
the case.
Right. You think it's one way and it's completely different. And then, you know, I came out of law school working for myself because I just am a horrible employee. I knew I wasn't going to want to work for anyone. So then being a lawpreneur since the beginning, enjoying all the ups and downs.
That's interesting. You know, isn't it interesting how many people are motivated to go into law based on TV shows that they like? At the
right
time. Now, I'm guessing that the Perry Mason that your mom was watching was probably the second iteration, right?
Probably.
Not the first. Yeah, not the first iteration in black and white, which old people like me recall.
No. That's the one she likes.
Okay.
That's the one she likes. Yeah.
Yeah. The old Perry Mason with Raymond Burr, who played the role. And of course, now there's a remake on, I think, HBO of the new Perry Mason.
Uh-huh.
A different approach. And of course, Law and Order spawned a lot of folks who wanted to get into the prosecutor side of law. So when you went to law school, what did you think you were going to do? And when did you end up coming out of law school deciding to do?
I thought I was going to do criminal defense. And I had an internship and one of our clients went to jail and I started crying in the courtroom. And I figured that might not be for me. And then when I came out, I was practicing door law. So, you know, anybody who came in the door, I took it.
Sure. That's a lot of how these things get started. I've, you know, told this story many times. I went to law school thinking I was going to put bad guys in jail. I was going to be a prosecutor. And when the time came, I had just a brief crisis of confidence and let me just look around and see if there's anything else that I might want to do. And one thing led to another, and I never got back to the prosecutor's office. So it's one of those things. So tell me a little bit about those early days. Then, you know, door law. I had somebody referred to at one time as table law. I did anything that would put food on the table. Were you working from the kitchen table, or did you have a shared office arrangement? How'd you literally get started, you know, physically?
I was working from the kitchen table, and then I got into a co-working space.
Yep.
It took some years before I went and got my own office space. By the time I got my own, figured out what areas I wanted to practice. So that, but again, for the first 4 or so years, I just was in a co-working
space. Right. Now, was this pre-COVID?
Yeah. It was pre-COVID. So I've been practicing since 2013.
Okay. And then had you already moved into your own physical space, again, prior to COVID?
Prior to COVID, I was it was a co-working space, but I had my own office. So right. It was just a dedicated space. And then by the time COVID happened, I was in another bay, but you know, everyone was being pretty generous with, they let us out the lease. I would go in there sometimes, but they were being very accommodating, great, great situation. So we got mail, made sure we stayed apart. I would go in because no one else was in there because I'm an only child and I go a little stir crazy. I can't be in the house all the time. I won't get any work done. So when I could go out, I went out to the office and just shut myself into space to do some work, but weren't really meeting clients or doing anything like that.
Yeah. The reason I asked that is because, you know, prior to COVID, everybody aspired to get to the point where they had dedicated office space for themselves. That was kind of what everyone did. And then as a result of COVID and since, you know, a more distributed, you know, workplace model, and not as many people are seeking out that dedicated space. Some are very happy just to stay with that shared coworker space and use it as needed. So I like to understand, you know, where people are at these days. And I think there's, you know, quite a few like yourself that you certainly could continue to work remotely if you so chose, but for whatever reason, and you get what yours were, you like going into the office. You like that experience.
Yeah, I do. I need to be around people. But I'm finding now, I think because we were in lockdown, that there are a lot more people who want to come to my office.
Isn't that funny? Because I find just the opposite.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, maybe it's a function of where we live. I mean, people are anxious to get out and about, and we've seen that happen. But at least from my practice, a lot of my clients have said, you know what, I'd rather do it from the comfort of my own room because I don't want to have to get a babysitter or manage the kids or you know, coordinate with the husband or wife or something, you know, those kinds of things.
Right.
So, you know, I think it's a little bit of both.
Well, and my practice area probably dictates that a little bit because I do estate planning.
Well, see, I was just going to say that. And your estate planning, you feel that your clients are more comfortable coming in face-to-face and being in that dedicated space.
Yeah. More and more are being that way. So the younger clients that I have, they're fine with Zoom. They want me to send them the document. We can do everything virtually. Anyone who's over 40-something, maybe 50s, they want to come.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that demographically, that sounds about right for most types of clients, young practice areas. So, how did you settle down then? I understand you do estate planning and you do some business law. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you settle on those areas?
So business, I had a test prep company before I became a practicing attorney. And so was always an entrepreneur, knew a lot of them. And so started doing business law that way, just helping friends. It ended up becoming a thing. And then added estate planning really because of family experience. My grandmother was the only person I knew who had a will or who did her power of attorney healthcare directive. And she got, she was diagnosed with dementia probably when I was in college, but took some time for her to pass away. But my uncle and my mother were able to do everything, get a nurse, take care of her. It was really easy. And then my uncle died when I was practicing, and my mother was in court 4.5 years, and he didn't own anything except they had the house together, and there she had to file taxes. She had to do all of these things flying back from Atlanta to, from Atlanta to Massachusetts. And it was really hard for her. And I couldn't do anything because I don't practice in Massachusetts, of course. And so I just felt like I don't understand why he wouldn't do it. And he saw how easy it was when my grandmother done it. And all of us are going to go at some point. And so I was like, well, you know, my business owners, I know that they don't want their children or their spouses to have to go through probate court or deal with a bunch of drama if something happens to them. And it made me just interested. I mean, because the rule against perpetuities turned me away in law school. But in life.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. No. So I think from a practical, I don't think in law school I understood how practical it was. It took me watching my mother suffer through having a lawyer and dealing with creditors and all of those things because my uncle just procrastinated and thought he would have some time and didn't. And so probably, honestly, 80% of my practice now is more estate planning because I enjoy it so much.
Right. What I think is also interesting is there is an intersection of those two practice areas that's largely oftentimes ignored. And, you know, from the business side of it, succession planning, how that dovetails with your estate plan or your trust plan is extraordinarily important. And so I think somebody like yourself that can provide counseling in both practice areas is a really valuable asset to potential clients.
Yeah, I think so. When they understand the value of it. And I mean, I think that's the thing is just helping them to one, figure out what's important to them. I mean, you're spending all your time on this business. You are an entrepreneur. A lot of them don't even think about, is it going to survive if you're gone?
Right.
Like if the whole business is dependent upon you, then, you know, is it a business or did you just create a job for yourself and it can't last beyond you?
Right. I, you know, a personal story, I had a business partner of mine in a previous business before I went to law school, but he went on to become a financial planner and had his own financial planning firm, very successful. And sadly, he passed away quite suddenly. And his wife came to me and said, Neil, we have a problem. All of the employees are leaving. And so, well, why is that the case? Well, because they haven't been paid. Well, okay, that's a good reason. Why haven't they been paid? Well, he never did a power of attorney, never had a will done. And so we can't get control of the bank accounts, the company bank accounts. And it was very close to having the whole business collapse because he hadn't done that succession planning. That is such an important part of an overall approach to estate planning.
Right. Oh, man, that's rough.
Yeah. So I think it's those kinds of experiences that help us demonstrate to, you know, the public how important this is. Because as you said, procrastination in the form of your uncle's scenario, procrastination is the biggest obstacle estate plan attorneys have to overcome, right?
Right.
Yeah. Everything, they can put it off. And then oftentimes it's too. My mother was the same way. My mother died with the unsigned will on her kitchen table because she was procrastinating getting around to signing it. So, you know, those stories are abound. So with your practice now, you've been doing estate planning and business law for a while. We've got you to the point. We understand how you got to the point where you have your own space and why you like your own space. Tell us a little bit about your staffing and your approach to staffing. What challenges or what obstacles you had to overcome to create the firm that you work with?
Huh. Now that's the loaded one. Okay.
I know.
I mean, the employees have been the biggest struggle for me.
Is that right?
I was never really an employee. So I didn't know, you know, how much time you have to spend really training, or I would just dump and give, you know, tasks and not give enough information, or, you know, I'm moving so fast thinking that people can just pick up and be resourceful and do things. And not that they can't, but you have to give people direction. And it took me a while to be able to slow down and do it. And I still struggle with it. But now I have like a client services director who helps a lot with communicating with the client, them update, being a gatekeeper so that, you know, I don't have to answer every single question all of the time. I have a couple paralegals, one on the business side, one on the estate planning side, two attorneys who work with me on the business side. And I do most of the estate planning, but within the next year or so, I think we'll need someone for estate planning. So now I have a team and I have someone who helps me with operations, who's kind of a go-between. So everyone doesn't have to answer to me directly, but it took a minute. It took, I mean, figuring out SOPs and, you know, all of those things, me following the SOPs. It's just been a lot.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you had to learn how to be a good employer before you could hire good employees.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think it's terribly candid of you and much appreciated that you would share that with our audience, because, you know, we're attorneys. We're in large part egotistical by nature. And, you know, we think we know everything. And when it comes to being a good employer, there's a lot to be learned. And it's not taught law school. It's one of the reasons we have this podcast. It's an important consideration. So how did you go about educating yourself? Did you go to some workshops? Did you hire a coach? Did you read some books? You do all the above? What was the process of you learning to be a better employer?
I screwed up a lot. And then I went to therapy and realized, you know, we can't be everyone else. And until I grow, my business won't grow. Like, I'm going to have to do something different. And so
I just started. So precious to say that. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, it was just at the end of the day, everything starts and stops with me. So it's like, I'm just going to have to be a little more self-aware. And okay, because they were saying to some degree the same thing, or when I was frustrated, it was about the same thing. And so I just had to take a step back and just look. I read some books. I've gone through one of the things that has been a treasure to me now. There's a coach called Molly McGrath, and she has Go ahead.
I've had her on the program.
You have? Oh, yeah. I love her. Law Firm Admin Bootcamp. Everybody goes through it now.
Yeah. Well, she's great.
She's great.
So that was useful to you.
Oh, she will have a fan for life, because some of the things that I wasn't able to articulate, she can do, and it gives them a community of people who are going through the same thing to talk to, like that. But a lot of it, and then I realized, you know, I have to have, what I didn't do is, you know, give a checklist or say exactly what I wanted. I just felt like they were supposed to know or figure it out. Almost like we had to do in law school. Oh, well, what do you think this case says? What do you think it says? Like, and just, I thought I treated them like we were in school, and it just didn't work, because they didn't go through that training that we went through that made us the egotistical people that we could be. And so I started writing everything down and started trying to, okay, this is what the process needs to look like. This is what I want. So that if it wasn't done, then I had something. I can't reprimand or be disappointed in someone for expectations that I didn't set.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very much true.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors.
They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, LexiClara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. I'm wondering if you had the same experience that I did. You know, when you start off as a true solo practitioner, you know, everything's in your head. Everything, the whole business operation, the logistics, the finances, it's all in your head. And when, to bring somebody aboard to assist you, you got to get it out of your head and onto a whiteboard or a piece of paper, or whatever your methodology is. I found that the process of just going through that was terribly illuminating, that I really identified, well, these are the sticking points in my workflow, or these are the areas that I don't really like to do. And so they get behind because, you know, I'm a procrastinator over things I don't like to do. Did you find that to be the case when you were developing the processes and procedures, or at least identifying them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because human beings, we like to avoid things that make us uncomfortable. And so then those things start piling up, and then I'm anxious about it, but I'm also not doing it. So it's a cycle of things until you put it on paper. Then you can really have visibility in what works and what doesn't work in your business, I think.
So then how did that transition into policies and procedures and standard operating procedures? Is it just a Word document that you develop, or did you use some other tool to codify those procedures?
It started with the Word. And then I reached out to, so through all of my practice, there are a couple consultants and different people. So to make it sound or look the way that it needed, I had a general idea. And then they just give me homework. So I just worked with someone, said, look, this is what my process is for estate planning. This is the first step. Then this is the second step. This is what, so I just tried to do that as much as possible. And then they helped me refine it to, you know, sound and look the way that, so in a way that someone could understand besides me and right. follow.
Okay, great. Now, in getting your staff, together and the procedures and policies that under which they're going to operate, is your whole staff located with you physically, or some of them distributed, or some of them virtual? What's the nature of that element?
Everyone is virtual.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, everyone is virtual.
Everyone's virtual, but you are physically located in the office.
I am, and that was another. Yeah, I had I did have an office, and there were people in the office, but then we transitioned everyone virtual. And so then now I've started using softwares and different things to measure and so that I could keep an eye on productivity and, what's going on.
You're anticipating my next question here, because you kind of have a hybrid approach, the best of both worlds. You have the office space that you cherish as a go-to location to get work done, but you have the flexibility of having virtual staff. Dedicated but virtual, that can supplement your needs. So now you need a process and a methodology for handling that type of environment. So what are some of the technology resources that you now rely on to get the job done?
I use Hubstaff. It takes random screenshots so that I can see. Now they're used to me, we can record on devices. Some of the lawyers, I've sent them laptops, so that we know what's going on. Rarely, honestly, I listen to it sometimes, but my team is pretty productive so that I don't have to micromanage or monitor them.
You don't have to look over their shoulder.
Yeah, no, I don't. But in the beginning, I do check to see if they're, following the steps. I want to record calls when they're communicating with clients in the beginning just to so that I can say, hey, this is how you should handle this one or something like that. And we'll review them together. So they know and are recording those things so that we can try and go through, this is how you respond to this kind of question or something like that. So in the beginning now, because we're virtual, I'm much more hands-on and schedule times a couple days a week for me to actually walk through things with them so that they know what the expectation is and how we want to communicate with clients. And it's been much better.
And then in terms of your work production, do you use a document management system, or what's your overall filing system like? Do you use Dropbox, or how do people access the data that they need to execute?
We use Clio.
Okay.
As our practice management software, and then we communicate as a team through Slack, which I love Slack so much.
Yeah.
Clio.
Huge fan of Clio. I'm a Clio user as well. I really wanted to go to the cloud conference in Nashville last week, but I couldn't swing it. But I also know that that would be a pretty taxing week for me. Clio during the day and Nashville at night. I mean, come on. I'm only human. yeah. And Slack is really a wonderful tool for, I think most people have some general familiarity with it now, but the platform has been overhauled and added so much functionality that it's much more than just a communication platform for team members. You can integrate Slack with all kinds of other services such as Zoom and the like. So it's really a very, very robust platform for team management.
I love it. Yeah.
So it begs now the question, the thing that a lot of attorneys have a challenge with is managing the money, the finances.
Yeah.
What was your learning experience like in that regard?
I'm still learning.
Is that right?
I had a call with my CPA earlier this morning and she's come on this year, but who went back through my taxes and just showed me and explained how the previous CPA or bookkeeper who I was working with, the mistakes that were made, different things like that. And I hadn't had someone just walk through it with me before. And I think because I'm the kind of lawyer who, listen, I'm a lawyer. I'm going to let you do your thing. I'm going to do my thing and stay out the way. And I did not really have good visibility on our finances at all. And so this CPA that I have, our relationship is really, really good. And she's going to, before she does anything, she's going to break it down and let me see so that I know where we stand financially and can make decisions. I have made some insane decisions and paid money that I didn't need to spend because I was managing my finances for the business by checking the bank balance or, you know, just not looking at reports, not looking at how many people leads were coming in versus who we converted, just not looking at the mechanics of being a business owner, running from it, just thinking, you know, I could just make some more money, get some more clients, it will be fine. But those auto debit, Leo, and all these other things that I signed up for, all the technology, it can overwhelm you when you sit down and look at how much you aren't taking home because I didn't look at it. So I'm still getting better year by year, but that's been a big thing, just managing the finances, because it's terrible. You do all that work and then you don't know where the money's gone.
Yeah. So if I could just make a little plug here, one of our sponsors, Ryan Kimmler, is both a sponsor, but I'm also a client of his. And what Ryan does is work with your CPA and work with your accountant, your bookkeeper, depending on what level of financial support you have in your law firm, and gives you the 40,000 foot overview of your practice. And for me, that was really important. I had the nuts and bolts of managing my QuickBooks accounts pretty well squared away. I did use a bookkeeper as well, but I wasn't getting the answers to the big question having to do with the firm's profitability and projecting a budget and tracking against it, that kind of thing. And Ryan was extraordinarily helpful, is still extraordinarily helpful in that regard. So if you or any of our listeners need that additional help, you know, which is a plug for Ryan, you'll hear his sponsorship spot here during the podcast as well. So what's your big challenge? What do you see the future is, and what big hurdle that you have to get over?
Deciding how big I want to grow, the firm to grow. I got in a big building and I thought I wanted all of the staff and all of these things and I hated it. And so I downsized. That's why I'm the only one in the office now and I let everyone work. And I enjoy this, having the freedom and not having to have to be in the office every day. But then also I like a challenge. I want to grow. So do I want to grow and just have everyone stay at home and we continue to do it this way? Or will it at some point be a situation where I want to go back into the office, but in a different way? So trying to figure that out, because I'm not sure. I know the old way that I was trying to do it that you mentioned before, that we all wanted, you know, a big, I didn't enjoy doing that at all.
I think also that your needs change over the course of time. I know when I started practicing law, I was already old, but in my younger legal days, that's kind of what I wanted. I wanted multi-partner firm and all the trappings thereof. The older I got, the less interested I became in that. And now I've come to the conclusion that, you know what, I like it just the way it is. I could be more profitable. I could generate more revenue. But in terms of structure, I kind of like it the way it is. So you may find that over the course of time, your needs change.
Yeah. I think that might be right.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit as we wrap up here about your involvement in the community. I know that, you know, in your previous life before law school, you had your business that you mentioned. But as you go forward now with your law firm, are you tied in with the community? Are you still active socially in that regard?
Yes. So I do a monthly event where I have different people come talk to them about you know, finances, almost like, you know, you and this podcast kind of was for you yourself in the beginning. And then it became something for everyone. I know because of my struggle with managing the finances of the firm, it's like, I can't be the only one. And so I'm going to put a group together of entrepreneurs and we're going to meet and talk about, you know, how to do better with finances, how to take care of ourselves, just all of the things that we need to think about. So we do that once a month. We have I do a lot of free seminars around estate planning, not necessarily. I think a part of my job doing this is to educate the community. Yes, we'll get some clients out of it, of course, but as long as someone does it, I just think it's so important for us not to leave it to chance. The estate planning that we're, you know, I'm speaking about it this weekend at a conference, just to spread the word that my old business partner gave me a slogan many years ago that it's stuck with me. And he said that your estate plan is the last love letter you get to write. And so you should make it a good one.
Isn't that a great way to put it? I love that.
Yeah. I mean, and so that has stuck with me over these years that this is what you should be doing. This is the way you take the last memory that could be there. Make sure you take care of them when you're not there. And so I just try and give that message out. And it's not about thinking about our mortality. And if you think about it, I think, you know, you'll live life a little more fully because you know you don't have all the time in the world. Maybe you won't be arguing or mad about something so simple if you think about the fact that you won't be here and that, you know, you get to write a love letter for them. So most of the community work that we do is just trying to give away a lot of information about estate planning, tell them, you know, where they go, do free wills workshops, people who might not be able to afford hiring an attorney to do it, things like that. It's become my ministry kind of.
Yeah, I think that is important because so many people just through no fault of their own remain ignorant of estate planning in general. I think it's also true for other practice areas, maybe less so in some circumstances. But yeah, I think we do have an obligation to educate. And if I had one thing that I can be proud of from my perspective is I may not be a real great, you know, the best lawyer in the world, but I'm a pretty good educator. And I find value in that. It translates into business for sure, but that's not the primary reason, as you suggested. Well, listen, Amber, this has been great having you with us today. What's the best way for our audience to connect with you if they want to follow up on anything you had to share today?
Awesome. Thank you. So our website is the Saunders Firm. SaundersFirm.com. I'm on Instagram at Ask Amber Saunders. We're on Facebook, but if you go to the website, all of my information is there.
Great.
Thank you.
And we'll have all that. We'll have all that in our show notes so that our audience can click through on that. I really like your website too. It's really nicely designed and, you know, it's not too busy. Sometimes we have a tendency to cram too much into a website that's hard to find, you know, the forest for the trees. But I like the approach that you took. So our listeners would be well advised to go ahead and check out thesaundersfirm.com. Okay. Well, again, Amber, terrific having you with us today. Thanks ever so much for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back Give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.